listening to The Drive on AM 940 KYNO.
I love that music. Thank you, Garrett. This is Gail Marshall filling in for Big Mac, Bill McEwen, who is off, taking a little time off. And we are really honored today to be hosting Lawrence Fisher. And Lawrence is an attorney from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who has written a memoir of a milk carton kid. And this is the story of Tanya Nicole, is it, how do you pronounce your last name?
Cash. Tanya Cash.
And Tanya was held captive for way too many years, like 10 years, and no one found her. But eventually, she was released, and Lawrence has captured this in a book. And we are so grateful to have him here today. Hi, Lawrence.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Okay, so tell us about Tanya. How did you meet her?
Well, she when she was 14 years old, she was taken captive by a school security guard who was 38 years old, and he kept her as a sex slave in his bedroom for over a decade. During the latter part of her captivity, I represented her father in a boundary dispute. I was unaware, in fact, that she was missing. But eventually, of course, the world became aware that she had been found. And it was an international story. We had media from Japan and Germany and the United Kingdom, as well as all over the United States, interested in this miracle, this remarkable story of a young woman taken from her family at the age of 14, young girl, really, and missing. It was during that period of time when, before Amber Alerts, when we would put the photographs of missing children on milk cartons.
I remember that, yes.
Tanya's image appeared on over 400 million milk cartons throughout the United States, yet there was no sign of her, no word of her, even though she was being held captive less than 2 miles from her parents' home.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
When she was discovered, when she mustered the strength to flee her ordeal, the world, you know, watched in an amazement at the strength it must have taken to escape threats to her life, the torture and the torment that she suffered for all those years, the degradation. And her father was overwhelmed, I believe, by the media attention, by the all of these news trucks parked out in front of his house. And in the modern day now of satellite television, there was an instantaneous need all over the globe to dissect every element of her story. And her family, her father, she asked me to serve as her spokesperson, to serve as a buffer between her and all of this media. But as I got to know her story, as I got to understand her story, I saw that this was a kid who had been lost in the cracks of the system, that she had been failed miserably by those social safety nets that are supposed to save our kids. I mean, the pedophile who held her captive and who raped her for all those years, he was a security guard in her middle school.
Oh, boy, the person you're supposed to trust.
Exactly, and his inappropriate behavior toward her was going on for months in plain sight of guidance counselors, school principals, teachers, etc. A juvenile lieutenant in the police force was well aware of her problems and difficulties, and yet no one really did anything to help her. And when she disappeared, she was a problem solved. And to me,
so what were the red flags that they should have seen, do you think?
They should have seen that he was purchasing cigarettes for her and candy and jewelry. That's not appropriate for a school security guard to be providing cigarettes to a student or let alone candy and jewelry.
So people saw him doing this or she was open with the information or he was?
She had a crush on him and she was openly spoke about that. Mm-hmm. People did. The school had video cameras, so everything occurred in the plain sight of videotape recording. And this was all well known to authorities. She was a troubled young girl who had a history of running away.
So they blamed her. Or they didn't care.
Both. I believe both. And to this day, there are those who blame her for the predicament that she found herself in. But I ask anyone to explain to me how a 38-year-old man holding a 14-year-old as a sex slave in his bedroom for 10 years can in any way impart responsibility on that 14-year-old girl. I've yet to hear a cogent explanation for how this is in any way her fault. And in fact, I sued the police. I sued the school district. I sued the security guard. I sued the pedophile and his parents because he lived with his parents. And we sought retribution through the legal system in a civil rights action, which forms some of the fabric of the book that you mentioned earlier, the memoir of a milk carton kid.
Now, wait a second. Did he hold her a sex slave while he lived with his parents?
That is correct. She was locked away in a room in the upstairs of his parents' home. His parents were elderly and as scared of him, as terrorized by him as Tanya Cash was. So you had this really horrible, almost something out of a novel, but this is a case where the truth really is much more strange and much more disturbing than fiction.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. That is terrifying. So how did these cases come out? Did you prevail in any of these?
These were novel cases because there had been 10 years between the time when authorities failed her, when the school district failed her, when the police failed her, and the time that she was actually found and saved. And courts are reluctant to allow you to look back 10 years and hold people accountable for their actions from 10 years back. Evidence gets lost, memories fade. There are reasons why we limit civil causes of action. The pedophile is serving a 15-year jail sentence.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to tell you that. But the case ultimately settled. There was a confidential settlement involved in the case. The police and the school district to this day, declare their complete lack of responsibility for what happened. But the book, Memoir of a Milk Carton Kid, details in an excruciating fashion exactly how authorities failed. And I think it actually serves really as a cautionary tale to show others, who run school districts in the modern age, what you do and what you don't do when you have a troubled child.
Right. So bring us up to date with her. What's going on with her now? Is she functioning, is she okay?
It has been 6 years since she was rescued, since she escaped that terrible ordeal. She has gone through an enormous amount of counseling and therapy. We have worked together, she and I, obviously, on getting her to the place where she can tell this story, where Memoir of a Milk Carton Kid is a feasible publication. It's actually a New York Times best-selling publication.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That is the strength that she has been able to, I think, call on or summon. It's the same strength that got her through 10 years being in a room, as a sex slave held by a monster. So, I don't know that anyone's ever going to be okay after such a horrible ordeal.
Of course.
But she's trying hard to make a life for herself beyond that terrible ordeal that she talks about in her book.
Well, you mentioned her rescue. How was she rescued, or did she get herself out, or how did that happen?
It's interesting. I think she lost the sense of who she was, and in the last 10 months of her ordeal, she went from being 14 to into her early 20s, and her captor lost interest in her because she was no longer a little girl, and pedophiles like little girls. They don't like young women. So he began to become disinterested. She began to become restless, and he gave her an alias. He named her Nikki Diane Allen and introduced her to his parents one day as his girlfriend. And so she came out of that room where she had been a captive for all those years, came downstairs into the living room, met these people that she had only heard through ventilation ducts, and all of a sudden went back up to that room, free yet captive in the same place where she was. For 10 months, she walked around the streets of McKeesport as Nikki Diane Allen, unable to get a job because she didn't know her social security number, unable to really function in the community. And she started hanging out with a gentleman at a local convenience store. She would pass the time with him. He was a rather fatherly figure. His name was Joe Sparico. And Joe took an interest in her, and he kept saying to her, why don't you get a job? Why don't you get away from this controlling man? Why don't you, you know, have a life? And finally, one day she broke down, and she told him, she said, I'm not Nikki Diane Allen. I'm Tanya Nicole Cash. And she said, check the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. You'll see.
So she knew about that.
She knew about it because her captor told her about it and said, look, you're just another number. You're just another face on a milk carton. Nobody cares about you. I mean, there was a great deal of brainwashing,
sure,
a great deal of psychological control that went on. But when she had that moment of courage, that moment of truth to tell Joe Sparico who she really was, and when he confirmed her true identity, the police descended on that home in a scene that's reminiscent of any crime story. And, of course, the rest is history, and much more detail is told in the memoir of A Milk Carton Kid.
That is amazing, amazing. And your story of his courage going to the police, that really turned it for her. Somebody spoke up for her at last.
I think the best chapter in the book is the chapter about her rescue. And when Tanya told Joe Sparico who she was, he instructed her to go back once again to that dungeon that she lived in practically, and to wait and act as if everything was normal and mm-hmm. he would take care of it. And she had a prepaid cell phone, and she would dart into the basement to call him and say, are they coming? Are they coming? What's happening? And she didn't want her captor to know that anything was going on because he might have killed her. He had threatened to kill her so many times in the past. She thought if he knew that he would kill her. And she waited until those police came up onto the porch and knocked on that door. And when she identified herself, the police then pulled the captor out of his bedroom where he was, put him in the living room, restrained him while she gathered her belongings and left 10 years of a life that none of us could imagine into a life that even she was yet to imagine would occur for her, because she went back to, as I like to say, the same brand new old world. She had all the problems that with her family and with her life at 24 when she escaped that she had when she was 14, and she just had to cope with them and deal with them differently. And we've tried to provide her with services and counseling and ways and means to deal with the fact that her mother is a schizophrenic, and mm-hmm. you know, that she comes from a fractured family, and you know, her stepmother has always resented her, and so there's all of these problems that existed back when she was 14, which motivated her to run away, which mm-hmm. caused which made her vulnerable and susceptible to being groomed by a pedophile. Well, now she's 30, she'll be 30, and she's still trying to rebuild a life and have a sense of normalcy that she's never known, even before she was 14.
Have you connected up with J.C. Dugard or Elizabeth Smart or any of those young women?
I know that Tanya would love to meet J.C. Dugard, would love to speak with her. We had an interview scheduled with Elizabeth Smart, but, you know, mm-hmm. the way the media works.
Right.
If it's not an exclusive, you know, if you go on another show before you go on a show, then someone pulls the plug on you or whatever.
Well, I hope they are somehow able to get together. The name of the book is Memoir of a Milk Carton Kid by Lawrence Fisher. It's the story of Tanya Nicole Cash. Fascinating. Thank you so much, Lawrence. You are listening to 940 KYNO. This is Gail Marshall in for Bill McEwen. Come on back for more.